Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the 2012 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration. And I'm pleased to welcome you to our next session, Winning Online Marketing Tactics for Cross-Channel Retailers, sponsored by CompuWare. For cross-channel retailers, 2012 is already a busy year with competitive pressure from practically every direction. Consumers and shoppers are being bombarded by marketing messages from every direction, so it's hard to catch their attention. New social media sites and services pop up daily, and once you've created a program for one type of mobile device, a bigger and better one is not far behind. As a result, to succeed in today's fast-paced world, foolproof online marketing tactics are required. In this session, you'll hear from a panel of leading retailers and industry marketing experts who will offer best practices and case studies on important online marketing tactics, such as paid search for customer acquisition, behavioral retargeting, and email marketing for customer retention. You'll leave the session with actionable takeaway tips for online marketing success. To guide you through these important issues today, we have four great speakers. Valerie Davis, the Senior Director of Client Services at PM Digital. Peter Yarnberg, the Director of E-Commerce Marketing for the Sportsman Guide. Charlie Cole, Vice President of Online Marketing for Lucky Brand. And Liz Ryan, President of Relish Trade Media. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You could also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the session, so you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console, and we encourage you to do that. Lastly, if you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Show on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning Monday, April 23rd. Without further ado, please welcome our first speakers, Valerie Davis and Peter Yarnberg.
Thank you, Melissa. This is Peter Yarnberg from the Sportsman's Guide. A quick background, Sportsman's Guide is a multi-channel company selling quality outdoor gear at great prices with over 4 million visits to our website. Geo-targeting with a zip model overlay. What I'm going to go through today is, in the presentation today, we will cover applying the zip model to geo-targeting for non-brand paid search, testing our methodology and results, along with rollout plans. Question is, why geo-targeting? We wanted to expand our paid search and reach more targeted customers. In our case, this was an outdoors person in rural areas. Geo-targeting also enables you to focus on locations where your customers tend to be, also to target specific products to different regions across the country by relevancy, and create stronger brand presence in targeted areas at specific times for key events. Zip model overlay enabled us to focus on stronger converting zip codes based on our customer behavior. Overall goal? Our overall goal is to grow non-brand paid search. What we're looking at is we also wanted to drive improved efficiency in select non-brand campaigns. We also wanted to focus budget on top converting areas. And finally, we wanted to reach new populations that were more inclined to buy our products. So in effect, getting better coverage in those areas.
Hi, this is Valerie Davis from PM Digital. We work with Sportsman's Guide, where they're agency for internet marketing, and we worked with them to launch the geo-targeting program and case study that we're about to present to you. Sportsman's Guide has non-brand, and as Peter mentioned, it was a key area of acquisition for them. They wanted to get more efficient with it and go after people where they thought would be more susceptible to buying their products. Excuse me, because I have laryngitis, so this doesn't make a presentation very easy. there were several different approaches we could take because there's several different ways you can geo-target. Some of the approaches we looked at was geo-targeting rural areas and counties based on population data only. A lot of Sportsman's Guide product and the non-brand campaigns that we were promoting, we felt people in rural areas would be more susceptible to their product. So we were thinking about that as an opportunity to target for more efficiency and acquisition. Another area of geotargeting was to look at their top-performing states for Sportsman's Guide on e-commerce. The problem with no consideration for population, the one concern we had here is that with every company, usually their top-performing states are just the largest states because of population generally. So then the third geo-targeting option we looked at was just excluding large metro areas from the non-brand campaigns that we were testing. The fourth option, which we felt was the best option, is we geo-targeted based on customer purchase activity using a zip model. What this means is Sportsman's Guide has a zip model for their catalog. They're a multi-channel retailer. They have a catalog business. The offline group, which is our sister company, created a zip model that showed, based on their existing customer base, how to target new customers in like zip code areas, hoping for increased acquisition. So in looking at all of those, we decided to use the offline data to geo-target. We looked at the model analysis. We took it, and we didn't want to just use the zip model. We decided to append population data since we knew the campaigns we were targeting were really tied to hunting and were more, you know, susceptible in rural areas. We decided to use overlay population data. And using our zip model, we identified the areas that were higher potential for response, and we rated them from like a 1 to 10 in deciles, and we targeted the top 3 deciles in the zip model. In order to implement this, Google, which is not the case anymore, only allows you to zip target 300 zips at a time. So we launched several different test campaigns to get close to 1,000 zip codes to test. We decided to go after the highest potential zip codes with a population of 1,000 or less. We focused on 3 non-brand campaigns. We targeted 300 zips per campaign. We left the control campaigns running, excluding the zips that we were targeting in the test campaigns. This way we had an A-B comparison. We were looking at what the results were at the refined targeted zip areas, and we were looking at the results on the national campaigns, excluding the rural areas and the high-performing propensity to respond. We used our bid management tool to manage cost-effective placements in geo areas. You can't really – I'm not sure if you guys are seeing the slide I'm seeing, and hopefully it looks better on your screen because it's very small. This is just showing an example of what the zip model looked like and how we were filtering by population, zips, and deciles. Decile 1 being the highest highest opportunity for us and 10 being the lowest. Again, we stuck with deciles 1 through 3. We looked at population areas between 1 and 1,000. When you look at a zip code, if you're looking at less than 100, we felt like we weren't going to get enough volume. And since we were only targeting 300 zips per campaign, we thought going with 100 to 1,000 are still very rural. So we decided to go with populations 100 through 1,000, deciles 1 through 3. Peter, I'm going to hand it back over to you to discuss the results.
Good. Thank you, Valerie. The performance results were very strong and proved our theory that targeting certain zip areas for specific product categories would improve results. The rollout potential of the campaign changed the way we think and approach all of our non-brand categories in terms of expansion opportunities. Also, possibilities for other geo-targeting applications have strong potential. The results were quite amazing. We saw a 106% increase in conversion rate. We also saw a 12% reduction in our advertising to sales ratio. the conversion rate increase more than offset the higher CPCs paid in the targeted areas to gain prime placements. The advertising the sales improvements continue as the test campaign gains history to compete with a control campaign. Barry? Are you there?
Sorry, I was talking on mute when you were. Sorry about that. With Google, there, I wanted to just throw this slide in. I thought it was very important for you to know that when we started the zip code test, we were limited in what we can do in terms of targeting 300 zips per campaign. That is all the zip code, the Google feature would allow us to do. They've since upgraded their system to allow us to target up to 10,000 zips per campaign. They are now allowing bulk upload features, and they also allow APIs, so we can send the – it makes the implications for what we can do with zip code testing so much more impressive, and we could target up to 10,000 zip codes using APIs and making it much more streamlined versus how we were doing it previously. The other addition to the geo-targeting feature in Google is they now allow you to see performance by zip, where previously when we were doing this test, we couldn't see what zip code was performing how. We just knew the 300 zip codes that we were targeting and as a universe how they were performing. Now we can see, and if the zip codes that aren't performing at all, we could always remove them or test them differently. So the geotargeting features that Google has evolved has been really great for us in terms of geotargeting and getting as refined as possible. And in terms of rollout, we continue to the early stages of this case study was based on early stages of this these three campaigns we tested, and we're continuing to run these to get more history and gain more a better case study. We want to continue to roll out all of Sportsman's Guide's campaigns to do zip models. They actually have a few different zip models based on the types of products they sell, so we can use this to really get much more efficient and get at their customer for a less cost and higher placement in the areas where it counts the most. So we're really happy with it. And with Google's new larger scale zip targeting options, we can really roll this out to major scale where we couldn't do that when we first tried this test, which is why we kept it as limited as we did. So we're pretty excited about the zip code targeting.
Very much so, yes.
And I apologize for my laryngitis. I know this concludes our portion, and I know we're saving questions for after, so I'm going to hand this over to Charlie Cole at Lucky Brand, who's going to talk about retargeting with you guys.
Thanks, Valerie, and thanks, everybody, for attending today. And so a little bit about me. My name is Charlie Cole. I'm the Vice President of Online Marketing at Lucky Brand. Lucky Brand is a denim retailer that has around 180 retail locations, 40 outlet, and an e-commerce business. To put it in comparison, the retail and outlet combines for roughly $250 million in revenue, and e-commerce fluctuates, but it's going to come in this year around $40 million. And so that's the size of our business. We also have a large wholesale presence. So as we talk about cross-channel retailers and we talk about retargeting, which is what my focus is today, just keep in mind the omni-channel implications, because this is designed to be more of a theoretical instead of a tactical. And so I think it's really important that thinking about it from your own gauge of whether if you're a pure play e-tailer or an omni-channel retailer is one of the most important things to understand with all aspects of online marketing. When I think about anything within e-commerce, I ask myself this question. And more importantly, and what can be very annoying to my creative team, my merchandising team, and my operations team underneath me is, I also like to ask this question to them whenever they want to do anything, which is, how is whatever we're going to do going to increase conversion rate, drive more traffic, or increase basket? With all the intricacies of e-commerce, it all comes down to these three things. Revenue is a very, very simple equation within e-commerce. We had X amount of people on the website. We had Y amount of people buy, and those people spent an average of Z. I urge you, when you think about paid search, and when you think about retargeting, and when you think about acquisition email, and when you think about site changes, and you make creative decisions, you ask yourself this question. And by doing so, specifically around retargeting, the answer to this question is number one and number three. Retargeting by itself, if you think about it from a unique visitor perspective, is not going to lead to incremental traffic. It'll lead to return visitors, but it will not lead to unique visitors. But you are converting a non-buyer into a buyer or a buyer into a repeat buyer. And because of that, you're increasing the overall basket and customer lifetime value. So it's important because we all have executives in our lives, and one of the things that executives would say, I think, what are we going to do to increase traffic? This is not a traffic-building tool. This is a conversion and basket-building tool, so it's important to understand that. As I think about the marketing universe, I think of it as this coordinate plane, where on one axis you have this idea of direct response and branding, and you have this idea of existing customers and new customers. In a previous section of this presentation, we were talking about this idea of unbranded paid search. I would argue that unbranded paid search would fall in the upper left-hand aspect of this coordinate plane with direct response tactics and new customers. It would probably be more towards the middle because I do think that there's a semblance of branding that happens because you are getting people to interact with your brand even if they don't buy. But these are people that you otherwise wouldn't have found because they weren't actively looking for sportsman's guide. They might have been actively looking for the term hunting supplies. Because of that, it's most likely going to be a new customer that otherwise would not have stumbled upon your brand. For retargeting, it's certainly in the upper right-hand corner of this coordinate plane. It is a direct response tactic designed to have positive direct ROI from a last click attribution perspective, and it's people who by definition already know about your brand. It will have some branding because even though they don't click on it, if it's a CPC campaign, and we'll talk about that, it can have a branding effect because it generally is display or email, but I would argue that it's very, very important to understand it's in the top right-hand part of this coordinate plane. The next aspect to understand is from a conversion funnel perspective. I like to think of everything we do in this conversion funnel, and I urge you to do the same from a retargeting perspective. But to make it analogous to the previous segment of this presentation, I want to start with the paid search example. The thing about the conversion funnel is as you get down it, you have a higher propensity to transact, but there's simply less people. And so alluding back to Valerie's presentation and Peter's presentation, they were talking about the very top of this funnel. There's a ton of people out there searching for hunting supplies, or to make it analogous to my business, I use the example jeans. But those people are very early in the buying process. And it's important at the top of this funnel to understand that, to be perfectly blunt, conversion rates are kind of going to suck. And so the goal is to move them down this conversion funnel with retargeting. And you get them to start thinking, okay, they wanted jeans. They came onto my site. They looked at a bunch of bootcut jeans. I'm going to serve them a retargeting advertisement in whatever medium it might be, display or email, that is designed to get them to start thinking about bootcut jeans. And now I have the opportunity to move them down even farther. And once they type in lucky brand jeans, I've accomplished some brand affinity, which is important to getting them to convert. And finally, if they type into Google lucky brand bootcut jeans size 34-34, that means they know my brand, they know the type of denim they want, and they also know what fits them. So does that mean they've gone to a store or they've interacted with my fit guide or whatever? That's the goal, is to get people to fill that bottom of the funnel. But the bottom of the funnel is only as good as what happened to get them there. And so in the example of someone that types in jeans and comes to luckybrand.com via paid search or natural search, I need to retarget them to move them down this funnel. And I would say that this is really kind of where it ends up looking, where you think about your marketing channel mix. Unbranded search is this vast, vast opportunity from a traffic building perspective. There's millions of people on Google every day, and an old statistic that the head of engineering at Google told me about 2 years ago was, at the time in 2010, 66% of searches that Google saw were searches they had never seen before. Now, I'd imagine that percentage is getting a little bit smaller now that the paid search has a growing, you know, it's more ubiquitous across the marketing universe, but it's still someone that has there's 10 million searches contextually for jeans on Google a month. That's obviously my biggest opportunity. But then retargeting is important to move them down the funnel and move them to branded search and move them to direct load. And so I would argue that even a couple slides before, I talked about retargeting to be a direct response existing customer medium. It also does have a small amount of branding, because even though there's a desire to look at it as an ROI positive venture, you can't just look at it as a last click attribution medium, because those people that see your ads and interact with your retargeting may come and convert by typing in your URL or searching directly for your brand in a different medium. So don't get too caught up with the direct response aspect. Finally, let's talk the basics. And I think it is important to talk about the basics regardless of your retargeting medium. And I feel like retargeting has become a bit of a cliche term in marketing to become synonymous with display. There are other ways to retarget customers that talk about in different ways. Card abandonment is a retargeting platform. CRM email is a retargeting platform. Display is a huge retargeting platform that has a large reach, but don't limit yourself to that. But regardless of the medium and regardless of who you're working with, and if you're talking display, Lord knows there's a lot of vendors out there, you know, MediaForge, Criteo, Datomi, Fetchback, you know, I can bail on forever, and they're one of those vendors that is really multiplying. It's ranking right up there with people that want to optimize your Facebook pace per click. So be important, be careful, and ask vendors these kind of questions. Do you have the ability to touch the frequency cap? How many times are we going to show a display to a given cookie? There is this creepiness factor, and the creepiness factor has become so prevalent that in the European Union, there are laws being put in place to stop breed cookies online because the public has had a bit of an outcry. And so if that's the case, that the entire European Union wants to do that, it stands to reason that you might upset your customer by touching them too much, both from a display perspective and from an email perspective. I know as a consumer, I'm an avid shopper of Gilt Group, but Gilt Group has a reputation of sending 3 to 4 emails a day, and because of that, it does turn some people off. My next bullet, I have CPA, CPC, CPM, CPE, CPE, CP, who cares? And the reason I say that is because everyone, and make no mistake about this, of the myriad of vendors that I just mentioned, every single one of them is triaging back to a CPM. All right? So you can get caught up in it, but don't get fooled by it. The CPA sounds like a great idea. Understand how they actually charge you for it. Is it a view-through CPA? Is it a click-through CPA? Does it have an attribution window? And that's where I bring the third bullet point, in my opinion, the most important bullet point as far as analyzing retargeting, which is attribution analytics. And what I mean by that is don't just view it from the last click perspective. Do you have a partnership with a vendor called Clear Sailing or a vendor called Convertro that gives you full funnel attribution analytics? Mediaplex is another one that does it. You're going to want to understand this because retargeting is a visual medium. We were talking about paid search. That's a text medium. This is a visual medium. It's a creative piece. It's either a display ad, an email ad, something that people can interact with. It can have an effect even if it isn't clicked on. And for that reason, don't forget about attribution. I mentioned the other mediums here. That's my point about not limiting yourself solely to display. There are other ways to retarget customers, and that's just important to understand. Creative is important. Creative can have a different effect from a retargeting perspective depending on your good desired goal. And maybe you have a different creative depending on how high up in the funnel people are. If they typed in jeans, my creative might be a softer sell. It might be more of a branding piece designed to get them back on my site based on the little data I have on that point. If they typed in bootcut jeans, maybe at that point my creative has a harder call to action with a promotion, knowing that that person is just a little bit more likely to convert. Something to understand, something to really think about from your retargeting, again, regardless of the medium. And I have my last point is the other channel. The other channel for me, ironically, is the channel that does 250 million to my 40 million, which is the omni-channel aspect of this. Maybe it's not relevant for everybody on this call, but if it is, you need to understand, and this is hard, what effects your retargeting is happening in your stores. With display, I have to say it's virtually impossible. But with email, if you have the ability to capture email at your point of sale, you can have an analysis of looking at your CRM from a POS perspective of what is happening with that email address and how often are they interacting with your retargeting pieces from a CRM perspective. Hopefully this was a high-level idea to get you thinking about retargeting, because there's a lot of people that are willing to help you with this from a tactical perspective. But strategically, it's important to understand your goals and understand what's important to you from a customer perspective. With that, I'm going to welcome Liz Ryan from Relish Trade Media. She's the president, and she'll take over from here. Liz?
Great. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. So my name is Liz Ryan. I'm president of Relish Trade Media. Just my opening slide here. A little just quick, blah, 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 10 years experience. I don't want to spend too much time talking about myself, so I'll just kind of skip over this. But I was working with Threadless.com, an online retailer, T-shirt retailer, and now I'm working as a consultant in focusing mostly on customer retention and life cycle marketing. So with that, what I want to talk to everybody today about a little bit is customer retention. I'm going to focus a lot on email. And what I want to talk about more than just customer retention is really community retention. We talk a lot about getting our customers back, and I think sometimes we need to take a step back and talk a little bit more about our community. And yes, that can be considered acquisition, but if we have somebody's email address or they're following us in our social networks, then we should really start thinking about keeping them there. So I want to talk a little bit about that today, not just concentrating our retention efforts solely on our existing customers. So who's in our community? Obviously, as I've already mentioned, newsletter subscribers, Twitter followers, Facebook likers, Pinterest pinners, Pinterest board followers, people who are reviewing our products, anybody if we have a site that requires membership or encourages membership, those are in our community. Pretty much, I would say anyone who interacts with your brand online or in real life is part of your community. So let's start talking about the email newsletter specifically. Ask yourself, are you publishing newsletters for non-buyers, or is the opt-in process only within the cart or after purchase, or is that the only, or is that the most obvious place? Do you treat non-buyers and buyers the same way? And also, do you send a welcome email? One of the things I find super frustrating sometimes is as an email consultant, I oftentimes go onto websites and sign up for newsletters. And it frustrates me how hard sometimes it is to find that newsletter, that people are only encouraged in newsletter subscription after purchase or within the cart. So a welcome email, this is the first chance you have after somebody subscribes to your newsletter to set expectations, to give them a taste of what your brand is all about, and give them an opportunity to opt out if they really didn't want to be part of your newsletter list, or even to give them the opportunity to set subscription preferences. They only want to receive once a week or certain types of content. It's a really good opportunity to give some sort of value proposition, whether it be some sort of specific content, a coupon, if you have a brick and mortar store, to give information about a store located near them, if you have that information, or an event, and of course we always want to link to our social networking sites and give some instructions on how to make sure that they are on your safe lender list so that you can get to the inbox or help you get to the inbox. So I just wanted to take – I have a ton of slides here. I'm going to probably skip through a lot of – not skip through, but go through them pretty quickly. You're welcome to download them. But I have a lot of screen grabs. And also, all these retailers I don't work with directly, just to give that disclosure besides Threadless. But I just kind of did some screen grabs, and I'm going to show those and share them. I think they're pretty interesting. One of the welcome email you can do a number of ways, and it really does depend on the brand. I have one here that includes a coupon. These are a coupon that I just got right away. I signed up for the newsletter, received the coupon. These are great. These show a lot of people love these, love to do them. They're easy to give out. But sometimes we need to, depending on either your ESP or your business model, you actually want somebody to do a double opt-in. And if you don't know what double opt-in is, that means after somebody subscribes, they receive an email and they confirm. So we can confirm. You can use your welcome email to confirm. And you can also confirm and say, if you confirm, then we'll give you your coupon. So that's another way to just use those different tactics in different ways that some different retailers have done. This is one of the Threadless welcome news emails that we did. And another thing that's important in welcome emails is that you can use it to show other parts of either your site or your community that the new subscriber might not know about. So here we had said, okay, you know, the Threadless business model encouraged participation on our site. Follow us on Facebook. And of course, come shop, please, is always a good one to put in your welcome email. So in general, the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated. So what we really want to do in email marketing is make sure that we're not sending too much email. The cadence, the putting the limit on how much email and how many times you're touching somebody. So what I say is that not everybody wants to. Just because I like to receive a lot of email doesn't mean everybody does. So give people the opportunity to tell you how often they want to in your subscription center, and then respect it as much as you can. Don't ask a lot of questions in your subscription center that you can't follow through on if you don't have the technical ability to do that. So here's an example of a preference center. Asking how often you want to receive it, a little bit of information about your local. We want to know something about where you are. If you don't already have it, we can ask what state are you in so that we can give you information specifically about your location. So as I said, customer retention is about community retention. So we respect privacy settings. When possible, we can target our content based on those preferences. If you can get some of that information up front, or whether based on their buying behavior or just what they told you when they sign up for the newsletter, that gives you a really easy way to target from the get-go. You can use social networks for customer service as well as community-focused content. And remember that people are now not only there are they in control of their inboxes, they can mark you as spam, they can put filters that send you directly to a folder that they never see until they want to. They can do all sorts of things, and they're also in control of their news feeds. They can, in social networks. I just have some real quick screenshots just to say, you know, I can hide everything from a retailer or from anybody who's posting on my Facebook. And I can also send you straight to spam. I can send you straight to a filter, all these things. So what you really want to do is make sure you have the best of your ability content that people want to see so that they don't just hide you. Other considerations can be, you know, buy cycle. If somebody just bought a car, don't keep sending them emails about buying another car. Send them some content maybe about the pride of ownership. They just bought a Jaguar. Maybe you send them information about Jaguars or accessories or tune-ups or services or anything like that. If you have a whole breadth of products, if you only sell one type of thing and it's not something that somebody buys all the time, then you might want, you know, send emails a little less or target them a little less often. But if you have a whole breadth of products and they bought some jeans and you know that there's a shirt that would go great with them, and just whatever you know about the customer, use that information. If they're a newsletter subscriber, they haven't bought anything ever, and all you know is that they signed up from at this day, or you know what state they're in, use some of that information. One of the things I would say is be careful about your targeting. Bad targeting can sometimes be worse than no targeting at all. If you're sending ice scraper emails to people in Phoenix, Arizona, you're going to kind of look silly, and it doesn't make your brand look really fantastic. There is existing tons and tons of emails out there, obviously, but there's a lot of kind of tried and true ways of using email to engage and to retain customers and your community. So some of those I've listed here, but I have a lot of screenshots, so we'll kind of work through some of those and see what we got. So the survey. Surveys are great for asking information, feedback on your product, but also engaging somebody in a conversation. It can also be a great jumping off point for customer service to have them either through the social network or through email directly or however you deal with it within your company to reach out to customers that aren't satisfied. Cart reminders. We hear a lot about cart reminders in email marketing. So they only make sense if you have somebody's email or they're logged into your site when you're usually when somebody's logged into your site, that's the only way you can really send them an email is if you know their email address. But sometimes there's creative ways to do something outside of the ordinary from a normal, you were on our site, you left some stuff in your cart, why'd you leave? One of the things we did with Threadless, which was pretty great, is because there was a limited quantity in inventory, that if a T-shirt was starting to run out of stock and I had put it in my cart and didn't come back, I could send it, even if it was a month later, I could send an email saying, you know, you have this in your cart that's running out. Do you want to buy it now? And those converted phenomenally. Loyalty programs are great. They're, of course, what they are loyalty programs, great way to get loyal buyers to come back. And they can also be a great way to use within the community to give some incentives for some free be a free member of our loyalty club for a month, even though you've never bought anything, to kind of give a taste and to entice new community members to become customers. Just emails. You can use loyalty programs to send coupons that they can use in the store so it doesn't have to stay online. There's another loyalty program. This is also another one where you registered in store and then the email was sent to cross that from brick and mortar to online. community-generated content. It can be reviews, but it can also be surveys or anything that you want to post the results from. This is just an example of a bunch of restaurants that were voted as the best choices in a certain neighborhood. Of course, re-engagement campaigns can be very powerful, and you really have to evaluate what that means to your brand and your business goals. But coupons work phenomenally in that sense as well. So sending a coupon to lapsed customers. As far as email, we always say that sometimes it's important to say goodbye. Oftentimes, if you have a lot of, I won't go into long details here, but if you have a lot of non-responding or non-engaged people in your email list, it can have effects on your bottom line eventually. So sometimes you just have to send maybe that last email that says, this is it. If you want our email, go ahead and try it and go ahead and respond. Otherwise, we're going to stop sending you emails. So as I mentioned, we want to talk also a little bit about social media. So there's a number of ways to cross email in store. You can use coupons with an email to go to get customers retained in to go up to your actual stores, of course. And then the social media. The number one thing about social media is engage. It's that's what people do. People go online to go into social media sites to be entertained, to get news, to interact in some way. There's a lot of companies doing different things, but there's some ways to drive traffic between email and social. You can use contests, curated pages with pictures of your products or services being rendered or whatever it be can be done on Facebook and Pinterest and a number of other social sites. You can drive traffic to your social media pages from your email, the other way, and from the landing page. You can drive traffic also to landing pages first share with your network. We have found in general and in my experience that a lot of people don't share directly from email, and you should always check with your brand and test, and I'm not saying it's across the board, but a lot of my times in my experience, what you really want to do is send people to a landing page and let them share from there. That can be different a little bit with Pinterest and really visual emails, but, test and try what works for you. Don't just slap share with your network email links into every email just because you should. Test and be creative with how you can integrate those two mediums. And one of the easiest things to do is to encourage Facebook, encourage newsletter subscriptions through Facebook with a tab. Some people have done it in other, in Twitter and all these other things. In Twitter, you can actually, one of the ways you can do is when somebody follows your brand, you can send a direct message to them asking them to subscribe. I've seen really good results in that. And actually, you'd be surprised, but not a lot of complaints about people saying, we don't want direct messages. But again, test it, what makes sense to your brand. If you're not comfortable with that, don't do that. But there's a lot of ways to integrate across channels. So in general, the final tips I'd like to point out is make it very easy for people to subscribe. Like I mentioned, oftentimes people have to dig to sign up for your newsletter, they probably won't. I'm the weird person that's going to, but a lot of people won't. Keep your content very customer-focused as much as you can. Target when you can. Don't over-target if you aren't really confident in the data that you have. And one of the things I can't stress enough is take the time to set up automated email programs. You can save a lot of time with your triggered messaging, with anything that you can automate based on either a life event or a customer's action on your site. Those emails just go on their own once they're set up. They take a little time to set up at the front end, but once they start going, they can be really great for customer engagement and for conversions. And stick to what works. What works for your brand, what works across the board. Coupons work for most people, promotions, but anything that you found, just keep testing what you found works. Don't try to be too crazy or mind-blowing when it comes to email. Sometimes it's just really what works, and oftentimes that can be just coupons. That's what people want, then give it to them. And that's really all I have.
Great, excellent. Well, thank you so much. I want to thank all the speakers, Valerie Davis and Peter Darnberg, Charlie Cole and Liz Ryan. But we still have about 5 minutes, so we haven't received any questions yet, so please send in some questions. We're here to answer them. But in the meantime, I'm going to ask a couple of questions. The first one is Pinterest. Liz, you mentioned it several times. It's a hot topic right now. Mm-hmm. Can any of you talk a little bit? I don't know. Maybe Charlie and Liz, you can discuss how you use, if you use Pinterest, and sort of why, and how is it, what are some best practices around using it?
Well, Pinterest for fashion has been unreal. I mean, just unreal. I mean, and it's a natural fit. And so for us, it's simply another way to proliferate a lot of our creative and justify investing in better photo shoots and stuff like that. But the thing about Pinterest is the people following our Pinterest board also have shown an inclination to buy things. And so I think best practice is use it as a reg price channel. Use it as the thing that is kind of the most glamorous and the most romantic and the thing that are most aspirational, because that's really what Pinterest is all about, is the aspiration and pinning things that you want. And so I think that it's a natural fit for fashion.
Absolutely. I agree. Also, some of the things with Pinterest, I'd say, is make sure you make it easy for people to pin. You want to curate your own boards for your brand, but also on your website, make it easy for people to pin the images themselves, because there's the two aspects of Pinterest, your own branded boards that you're promoting and what people are pinning from your site. So just make it easy for people to do that.
Great. We have a couple questions. We actually have a question. And this can go to any of the speakers. Can you comment on whether or not printed direct marketing, such as catalogs, direct mail, print advertisements, if you feel these types of tools are driving consumers to online, email, Facebook, website? The focus of this presentation was online marketing tactics, but how do you guys feel? Are you still using those tools to get folks to your online sites, e-commerce sites? Anybody could take it.
We have a circulation of around, I'd say about 3 million catalogs annually. And I'd say right now it was something we at Lucky Brand put in about a year and a half ago, and we use it as kind of a combination of best customer and loyalty program. And so we don't have an official loyalty program like Liz alluded to, but we use the catalog as a branded piece, and then we do track them back to both online and in stores. It still serves mainly for us as a drive-through store, but I'd say about 10% of our catalog revenue, people that are actually redeeming the promo codes that are written in the catalog, do come to the web. But I also think it's fair to say that that's also – there's macroeconomics in enforcing that, because we just started and we've always been more of a store business. But if you go back 10, 12 years, I mean, J.Crew, which is now a billion-dollar e-commerce business, they were able to grow from zero to 80 million in its first year because J.Crew was founded around catalog principles. So I do think it has some bearing, but at the same time, justifying the cost can be pretty tough.
Maybe Peter, you can comment on that. I'm pretty sure you guys have catalogs.
Sure, yes. On our catalogs, what we do is we leverage the catalog space with go to the website for expanded assortment for products, so that we can save on the page space and put other products in there. So we use it as a lever between the two medium for our firm. And we put a lot of catalogs out a year. We started as a catalog company, and now we're upwards of about 70% on the Internet. So we do leverage the print media. We leverage the emails a lot, and also been using Facebook quite a bit. So we continue to see direct mail as a primary part of our business, of pushing traffic to the web.
Mm-hmm. And Liz, do you come across that with your clients and your consulting company, or?
I don't work a lot with it. I've done a little bit of like using QWERTY codes and sign up for text messages and things like that. It depends on the brand and how successful it was, but it's certainly something that I focus on.
Okay, great. Let's see. Another thing that I thought was interesting was. Actually, you know what? I think we're actually running out of time. I was just about to ask another question, we are running out of time. We only have about a minute here. So let me just start by saying thank you so much to our wonderful speakers for their great information and their great insight. I'm sure a lot of these best practices our listeners will take back with them. I also want to thank our sponsor, CompuWare, and I also would like to thank you all for attending the event today. And remind you that if you'd like, you can please go to the networking lounge after this session and make sure to talk about it and offer any insight to it. And also, please go to the main page. And I'm sorry, I'm looking for somebody here. And make sure to fill out the survey. Okay, I'm sorry. Also, please visit the info booth where you can fill out a survey to show us, to let us know about your experience today. Finally, remember that if you can't watch these presentations live, you can add them to your briefcase and you can view them at your convenience in the on-demand environment. So have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.